The Guardian.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Guardian Football Weekly. Today, the Premier League, Super Sunday, and not quite as Super Saturday. City ease past Arsenal, Chelsea inch past United. Watford throw it away at Everton, and Spurs' third keeper keeps out Palace. How long does Slaven Bilic have at West Ham? And how soon after we finish recording will they announce David Moyes? Also, the FA Cup begins. We'll go in-depth on Ryan Babel. Round up Europe, get your questions. Feedback corner, and that's Guardian Football Weekly. Barry, how are you?
I am very, very, very well.
Last week you ruled yourself out of the Sunderland job. Jonathan Wilson, are you doing the same thing or are you interested in the role?
I'd do it, yeah. Yeah. I mean, how can I do worse than what's happening now?
But you would have to go to all the games.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good point. Would I?
I think
would
so.
Did Brian Clough go to all the games?
Ooh, I don't know. He was at most of them.
And he was the greatest manager Sunderland ever had. Okay. So,
okay, fair point. Maybe you could job share.
Yeah, I'd like Slaven Bilic. I think we should just swap Bilic and Moyes. It seems like an ideal solution for everybody, apart from West Ham.
Yeah, but you don't currently have Moyes. Bilic has gone. Breaking news. For the first time ever, a manager has gone. While we're recording the pod, breaking news, everybody.
See how quickly I offered him a summer job. I like that.
Do we know if David Moyes has got the job yet? This is quite fun, live as it happens on the pod. Priya Ramesh, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
You come with a sort of Dele Alli strapping on your thigh and you're going down over your knee. Is this, do you normally have that sort of, is that for the pod or is that for other sporting activity?
No, I play Sunday League football. Okay. So it was for that. And you can leave it on for 3 days and I am due to play more sport over the next few days. So Okay. Why not just make use of it?
Okay, then. Well, I was going to start with Sunday, but we should probably start then with West Ham since it's just happened. Pretty unsurprising. Slaven Bilic has gone. They lost 4-1 to Liverpool at the weekend. It was pretty poor, wasn't it? Are you surprised, Barry?
Am I surprised that Slaven Bilic has been fired?
Mm-hmm.
No, not in the slightest. I'm surprised he's been fired and that David Moyes is the favourite to take over from him because I don't know how many times you're allowed fail now before you're considered a beaten docket and damaged goods, but it, you know, David Moyes has done pretty badly in his last three jobs. I think he's made bad decisions in taking at least two of them, and probably, you know, Sunderland was a bad move from him, as was the job in Spain. And, you know, following Fergie was always going to be a tall order, although it could be argued he wasn't dreadful at Manchester United. But, yeah, I kind of feel for Bilic. He seems like a good bloke, but he didn't seem to have any sort of coherent plan at West Ham. Don't think it's been helped by the fact they're at the London Stadium, which is clearly doesn't suit them. It's not a football stadium. They've lost more matches than they've won there. They've conceded more goals at home, I think, since moving there than any other team has at home apart from Swansea. So, yeah, it was kind of inevitable he was going to go.
Jonathan, apparently the West Ham hierarchy have been surprised at the fan reaction to the suggestion that David Moyes was going to come in. How can they be surprised? I mean, how is that possible?
Maybe they just don't read newspapers or talk to anybody or put on the television. I don't know.
What could West Ham fans expect?
Well, I mean, this is Moyes' last chance, isn't it? And I think he's very lucky to get it, assuming he does get this job. But yeah, I think Barry's absolutely right. Yeah, the United job, obviously, you're going to take it. You can't turn that down.
Yes, but being the guy who follows Fergie, you want to be the guy who follows the guy.
Just ask Andy.
That didn't work out too well either.
If you're David Moyes, you're never going to turn down the United job. He could have no guarantee he'd be offered a job of that kind of status ever again. And it was obviously always going to be a hard job, and he didn't go particularly well for him. I suppose you give him a slight pass at Real Sociedad because it's a new culture, new country.
I would argue on that front that he made no effort to integrate himself into the culture or the country.
And you give him a slight pass on Sunderland because it's such a basket case. They were going to go down.
But then you should give him a slight pass on West Ham when he messes this up.
Yeah, maybe. Yes, yeah, but. When you see people like Sam Allardyce complaining that young English managers don't get, or young British managers don't get a chance, the people who are blocking them aren't kind of gifted foreign managers. People like Sam and David Moyes. It's the 60-year-old British manager who's clogging up the system. So it just seems, I don't know, it's just it feels a completely unambitious, unexciting, unimaginative appointment if Moyes gets it.
It's just interesting to see the kind of impunity that someone like Moyes and Allardyce can get in a system where foreign coaches are absolutely, you know, drawn out in the mud for any failure. And if I'm not wrong, Slaven Bilic had the best points per game ratio of any permanent West Ham manager. Obviously, this season has been bad, but I think that's also underscored by the fact that West Ham's transfer strategy lacked any coherence of any sort over the summer. So it's not like he was given the best raw materials to work with in the squad. And I mean, I'm just not really looking forward to West Ham under Moyes.
Although, to be fair, can you bracket Moyes and Sam in the same thing? I mean, you're right.
No,
young English coach, because Sam, if Sam took over West Ham now, they would stay up because that's what he does. And then he takes the summer off and then, you know, comes back.
But
in
yeah,
February.
You're right. Sam hasn't had a failure like Moyes' failures.
No,
that's absolutely true.
I believe they approached Marco Silva, Manuel Pellegrini, and Roberto Mancini before approaching Moyes, but I think they're all in jobs and none wanted to.
Oh, what, just now? As in?
Well, in recent days, in the last 10 minutes.
So you know a lot, Barry. You found that out in the last 10 minutes. Yeah, I agree. I do think that the London Stadium is such a... I've just not heard anybody say anything positive about the London Stadium as a place to play football. And I don't know. I just think that makes it so difficult for whoever takes this job.
I mean, this is a very sort of selfish way of looking at it, but I pretty much had a day off on Saturday. And so it's quite useful on a day off to sometimes go and watch football rather than just watching it on telly. And it was only sort of 5:30. I was like, oh, I could have actually gone to West Ham today. And it never sort of occurred to me to do it. I thought I'd just watch it on telly and flick between that and the Bundesliga game.
And Celebrity Pointless,
game.
I presume.
And what's that?
Celebrity Pointless. Is that started by then?
I don't really like Celebrity Pointless. I'm a big fan of Pointless. Celebrity Pointless, I don't know. It just lacks the edge of a real thing.
Should we mention the game? Liverpool did play quite well. I mean, West Ham were so bad. Even in that the break from the corner where basically Liverpool were on like times six speed and West Ham players were just running backwards.
And left one player back.
Yeah.
And you know how good Liverpool are on the break. I mean, I find that hard to understand.
So what does David Moyes do then? Presuming it is Moyes.
If it's like when he took the Sunderland job, he'll come in, be very pessimistic in his introductory press conference, announce that they're very much in a relegation battle, that he's not hugely confident of winning, and immediately turn what few fans aren't already against his appointment.
And then they'll drop deeper and deeper and deeper. Last 20 minutes of games, he'll be in a good position. He'll put on a defensive substitute and he'll get even deeper. And then they'll concede late equalisers and winners, which he actually did at the London Stadium against West Ham. Some of them were holding them 0-0. And Winston Reid scored a 25-yard drive. Some of them were actually on top in the second half. And he took off Stephen Pienaar. Fair enough, exhausted. Brought on Paddy McNair. And some of them were pretty much playing in that big space behind the goals by the end of the stadium.
which former Everton players will he bring?
Stephen Pienaar can still do a job. I met him only for 8 minutes, but...
David Unsworth might be out of a job.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, I think Sam Allardyce is actually tipped to replace him at Everton.
Do we think? I heard Sam say potentially he wasn't going to take that job. Let's talk about Everton then. Move on, because that was a great game of football, a completely ridiculous game of football on Sunday, the Watford game, and at 2-0. I mean, Unsworth has not done well since he's taken the job. He's been very proud to have it, but he really hasn't done anything that would convince you that he should get the job.
He knows the club, Max.
Well, he does know the fabric,
yeah.
Specifically the fabric
Quite
of the club.
Quite a lot of fabric.
Are you going all Joey Barton now, Jonathan?
I mean, Big Sam's not going to solve that problem. If Joey Barton thinks the size of the manager is the issue, Big Sam is not the solution.
Do you want to talk about the Watford-Everton game?
Sean Ingle, father of Football Weekly, did the ridiculously ambitious accumulator bet for the weekend and had about £4,000 riding on a Watford win.
Oh,
how we laughed.
Because really, at 2-0, at 1-0, then Gomez gets injured, and that's a big turning point because the lad that came in, Orestes Karneses, he just came out for no need to come out, completely missed the ball, and the ass kind of sort of rolled the ball in with his ass. And then, yeah, I mean, it was just, there was just no way Watford were going to lose that game. But Everton are now 8 points off seventh. So they could get the seventh place that we all thought that they would get, although I don't think they will.
I mean, they're also 2 points in the relegation zone. So.
But I'm only looking at them in terms of seventh place. That's all that matters for Everton, even if they go down.
I don't know if Watford fans ought to be concerned. You know, they do seem to be throwing away points carelessly. Marco Silva is very highly regarded, and rightly so, but he does seem to make quite a few sort of significant errors, whether it's bad substitutions or, you know, his general game management seems poor. And to lose 3-2 against a bad side while from being 2-0 up would suggest game management there was not brilliant either.
And, you know, we should point out, Tom Cleverley, there was some who's going to take this penalty. Not quite a fight over who had the ball and who didn't have the ball, but I think if you have any sort of shenanigans before taking a penalty, it's a good idea to hit the target. Should we move on to the games that we were going to start with until Bilic got sacked? Man City 3, Arsenal 1. City's extended their unbeaten streak to 23 games in all competitions, their best ever run without defeat. Only PSG have scored more goals in Europe's top five leagues. Is it unfair to suggest this was easy for City, Jonathan?
I thought it was a slightly odd game in that, yeah, they were completely on top, and yet their second and third goals, I mean, the penalty was soft at best. And the third goal was clearly offside. So, I mean, 3-1 was a completely accurate reflection of the game, but the goals themselves felt... I can understand why Arsenal felt a slight level of grievance about
it. So do you have sympathy then with Arsene Wenger?
No. No, I mean, that you know, you're more likely to get a bad decision against you the more chances you concede. So...
But it was a penalty. No one thinks it wasn't a penalty. I mean, it might have been soft, but...
Yeah. Well, it was a penalty.
Yeah, he got kicked by Sterling, and then Wenger comes out and says... He's good at diving.
Kicked by Monreal.
What did I say?
Sterling.
Yeah, I don't think that was a fair comment by Wenger, to be honest, because it was pretty clearly a penalty. And for him to go further and not only blame the referee, but also suggest, you know, Sterling has a reputation for this or is consistently doing this, I don't think that's fair to Sterling.
No, I agree with you. And actually, Raheem Sterling has been a real high point this season, I think.
Yeah, him and Sané as well, I think. There was questions early on when City played two up front about the roles of Sané and Sterling and how they'd come into the picture. And I think the way Guardiola's rotated his team, we have gotten to see a certain level of, you know, what we expected from Sterling and Sané in terms of how they grew.
Although there was a great moment, I don't know if anyone saw this in the slow motion replay, where Sterling was through an overhit a ball across where he could have easily squared it for someone to score. And a City fan, you could see in super slow-mo going, "What the fucking hell was that?" And you think, seriously? I mean, the football you're playing, just don't be so angry about everything. Big, fat, bald man shouting.
Well, we talk about Manchester United's poor record away from home against the Big Six, but Arsenal's, I think, is even worse. Since the start of 2014-15, they've played 18, won 1, drawn 7 and lost 10. I mean, that's an atrocious record away from home against... teams, you know, fellow so-called title contenders.
Dupe17 says, Coquelin has one of the worst games for Arsenal on Thursday in the Europa League, and Wenger starts him versus Manchester City at centre-back. What is Wenger smoking?
The whole Coquelin situation is bizarre. He's been the worst player at Arsenal for 2 or 3 years. He had that one great game away at City when they won 2-0. It was him and Cazorla at the back of midfield. And suddenly, Coquelin, yeah, he's brilliant. And then he sort of lived on that for, I don't know, how long ago was that? The year's merging the one now, but...
January 2015, I'm
told. It was only 2 years, two and a half years.
So he could still live on that reputation. I did a good pod in 2015.
Did you?
Yeah. So what do we make of Arsenal now then?
A couple of things struck me. I mean, I thought the decision to not select either Lacazette or Giroud and put Alex Iwobi in was just extraordinary.
Why doesn't he pick Lacazette?
I mean, I don't know.
He keeps not picking Lacazette. 60 million quid forward... who, admittedly, I think is kind of, in some respects, limited. But what he does do, he's really good at. He's quick and he finishes. Yeah, and so if you've signed him, why did you not use him?
And when he came on, he scored. And another thing I've noticed, I think other people have noticed this as well. Alexis Sanchez and Aaron Ramsey don't get on. They will not pass each other the ball.
Will they actually not pass to each other?
No.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And this goes back to... if not before, but in October in a game against Everton, they had a big row. I think Ramsey misplaced a pass to Sanchez. Sanchez had a real go at him and they had an on-field row. Then they had another one in a game against Bournemouth in January. And it hasn't gone unnoticed that during Arsenal games, they refuse to pass the ball to each other. So that needs to be either sorted out by Arsene Wenger or else you can't have the two of them in the same team. It's just not practical.
It's very possible Sanchez and Ramsey won't be on the same team come January or maybe the summer.
So if there's a situation where clearly it's the most obvious pass for one of them to play it to the other, just a five-yard pass.
Won't do it.
They won't do it.
No.
Well, that is fascinating. And in some ways, I find it quite heartwarming that they hate each other so much they won't pass the ball to each other.
At Manchester United, you have teams...
Showing him in cold didn't get on.
They didn't get on, but they didn't let that interfere with the collective will to win or whatever. You know, they passed each other the ball. But Ramsey and Sanchez, no.
Do you know if either of them like Mesut Ozil?
I don't know.
Okay. Because he, once again, didn't have a fantastic match. Is he gone in January, do you think? Or do you think they'll just all wait until...
Who would sign him? I don't know where Ozil fits in any top team.
Moyes could put him in?
Well, West Ham can't afford his wages.
Don't both Ozil and Sanchez run out of their contracts in the summer, so Arsenal will have to let them go on a free.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they might look to offload both of them for at least some money in January. Because I don't see them agreeing to contract extensions necessarily.
But I think Sanchez will go, and I think he looks like he might go to City, but I don't know, can't see who would want Ozil.
That's a good point. Oh, I did wonder, do you reckon Wenger was just angry with Sterling because he didn't get him, because he thought he might get him, and it was just him being sad?
Well, in that case, he's angry with half of European football.
Yeah, he probably is, isn't he? Chelsea-Manchester United. I thought this was going to be an absolutely terrible game of football, and I was completely wrong. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was a lot better than... the previous two United games against top six sides.
Is anyone else devastated that Phil Jones' own goal was disallowed?
That was sensational. To under pressure, to hit the ball that cleanly.
The outside of your right foot, on the volley, underneath your... So below the knee, yeah.
And it was the most Phil Jones thing to do.
Kind of finishing United could have done with at the other end.
You're right. Oh, it was a wonderful moment. The goal was glorious. A glorious header from Morata, wasn't it, Baz?
Yeah, but the defending was shocking, not to take anything away from Morata. Azpilicueta gets the ball in a deep position, and he's done it, I think, four or five times already this season, picks out Morata with a cross, Morata scores with a header.
Yeah, he was in acres of space.
Yeah, totally unmarked. I imagine Jose Mourinho was furious, and he blamed the defenders afterwards and said, more or less said, look, there's only so much I can do. I warned them about that happening. But the one thing I would say is that United, because they didn't park the bus as many people expected them to, because they probably couldn't, because City had already increased the gap between themselves and United before that game kicked off, they didn't really seem to know whether to stick or twist when it come to going forward or sitting back and defending, and ended up not really doing anything.
How interested were you that David Luiz was left out, Jonathan? And apparently was made to be a ball boy in a training session.
Yeah,
in the week.
Conte was really sort of confusing about that afterwards, because on television he seemed to suggest that it was a disciplinary thing. He said something like, he's got to learn to get on with people or he's going to sit in the stand. And then in the written press conference he was pressed on that and sort of backtracked and claimed it was a mistranslation, that he hadn't quite understood what he was saying. But everything you hear from within the club suggests that it is a disciplinary thing. So David Luiz had queried Conte's tactics, and Conte didn't take kindly to that.
It's interesting, because I was surprised when they signed Luiz, and I didn't think he'd be very good for them, and he's actually been really good for them. But yesterday, Christensen played really well, didn't he?
Yeah, really well. Yeah, yeah.
The thing I find with Kit Christensen is that everyone's kind of lauding him as this new find, but he was one of the best defenders in the Bundesliga for like the last two seasons consecutively, and it's just odd that you think players coming in from a different league still need to prove themselves as a Premier League player and whatnot. But, you know, Christensen did come with a reputation, and I don't think he should just be treated like, you know, a rookie.
But Priya, the Premier League is the best league in the world.
Well, clearly, because City are currently cruising it with, you know, Guardiola's never had a better start to a season, neither with Barcelona, not with Bayern Munich.
Yeah, but anyone can beat anyone.
You sort of mentioned quite often, Max, about how Manchester United are just a dirty long ball merchants, you know.
Yeah.
And nowhere was that more apparent yesterday than when Fellaini came on. elbows Morata in the head, and then, you know, it's just they're lumping balls forward to him. And you're just going, how much money have they spent? He is John Fashanu, and they are Wimbledon 1989. And it's cost them 300 million quid.
I feel really bad for Mkhitaryan, because he can be really useful in possession. And I feel like his passing was something that they lacked yesterday, in that Chelsea had a Fabregas who could play balls over defence and, you know, watch the runs that his wingers and his forwards make. But Mkhitaryan was just completely cut out by his own players, because they just opted to go over him instead.
He had 29 touches in the 61 minutes he's on the pitch, Mkhitaryan. Lukaku only had 24 in a full game. But
and no in the opposition penalty area, Lukaku.
But completely, you're just sort of wasting it. Why even bother having Mkhitaryan on the pitch? If you're going to play long like that, play an extra midfielder. Because what ended up happening was that Chelsea, as Tottenham had done, overmanned them in midfield. And that's why nobody could get out to Azpilicueta when he put in the cross, because Ashley Young couldn't come forward because Zappacosta was outside him and everybody else was picking up a man already. So there's nobody there to close down Azpilicueta. So he has hours to measure his cross.
But I also think this is actually something Chelsea have worked on, because it's the fifth time this season this has happened, and it's a very common theme that you see in their games is Azpilicueta is always their extra man in possession, because when they overman the midfield, he then has that space, and he's actually got a really good cross on him as well. So
which is the advantage of fullback playing on the right side of the three.
And before we hammer Mourinho a bit, Baz, you don't think Conte's going to hang around?
I would not be hugely surprised if he's gone by the end of the international break, and I certainly don't think he'll last the season. But, you know,
and you base this just on?
Well, I'm basing this on the fact that he doesn't seem to give a damn whether he's sacked or not, and why should he? He'll easily walk into another job. He clearly doesn't get on with some or all of the people who gave him the job in the first place. From what I've heard, he doesn't even speak to Abramovich, and now he's fallen out with David Luiz, who's one of Abramovich's sort of pets, and that will only end one way, and it'll be Conte going.
In what ways would you say he's a pet? Does he walk? Does Roman Abramovich take David Luiz for walks?
Probably takes him for walks. Has a pattable head.
He does have a pattable head. And
yeah,
throwing a ball.
Throws balls from sticks and waits patiently while David cocks his leg at a lamppost after sniffing it for some time.
Hugh Hogan says, is there any truth in saying United under Mourinho are just a rich West Brom?
Yeah.
Jack says, would you rather share a hotel room with Jose for a month, no leaving the room, Priya, or eat a pint of soil?
Soil, straight up.
And Joey says, why are you so anti-Mourinho?
Because he's not a nice man. Okay. He's a bully.
Those things, absolutely. He spreads his poison all the time. You know, he has no concept of the consequences of what he does. He takes no responsibility for the consequences of what he does. And his team's had six shots on target in three games against big six sides. And as a result, they're 8 points off the top.
He reminds me a bit of a second-rate Iago from Shakespeare's Othello, where he's just basically trying to manipulate things with his words, but then not quite as effective as the original character, obviously, and just kind of becoming a paragon of you know, everything supposedly anti-football.
And this was a piece that something that Barney mentioned in a piece last week, after I'd mentioned it to him, his son was having a cricket net before me, so we were chatting beforehand. And I foolishly gave him a column idea, which I then couldn't use.
And I bet he did it really well.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah,
oh,
he did.
Damn him.
But there's this idea that Mourinho's pragmatic, and Mourinho loves the word pragmatic. And he said pragmatic even in his press conference yesterday. But he's not pragmatic. Pragmatic is doing what it takes to win. Mourinho just relentlessly goes with negativity. And I think actually the pragmatic thing this season is not to do that. It's to take the risks, because City are going to get 90-odd points. So you can't afford to give away 2 points at Liverpool.
And I think this is probably true for the season as a whole, because City are basically just going to roll the league based on the fact that all the other top six teams are going to just take points off each other.
I just did a thought. The way they're going, City will win the league by between 19 and 20 points.
Okay. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll begin with Spurs, and then we'll look at Saturday's games too. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly. Spurs 1, Palace 0. Paulo Gazzaniga, the man of the match. Interestingly, when the team was announced, me and Baz were on the radio, and a Spurs fan who lives on the South Coast said, the Southampton fans he knows say Spurs would be better off with, what was it? A pile of horse manure. I think it was horse manure. It actually turned out that he was better than a pile of horse manure would have been in a Spurs shirt, Gazzaniga.
Well, how big is a pile of horse manure?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I suppose if it was as big as the one that covered Biff in Back to the Future 1 or 2.
As long as it's 8 yards long by 8 feet high and deep enough that you're not going to penetrate it, then it's going to be better than any goalkeeper.
You make a very, very good point. And why no one's thought of that?
But you'd have to shift it at half time. That's the other problem.
You'd have to muck it out, wouldn't you? That's what you do with the players. That's what Conte would do with David Luiz. So if you could muck out the horse manure we've used instead of a goalkeeper. And Gazzaniga basically gave away a penalty in the second minute that wasn't given when he hurtled into someone. And then Palace had some very good chances, but just couldn't take them.
Pyong Min Son became the highest scoring Asian in the Premier League, if I'm not wrong. I think it's great that he has now risen to a position in the squad where he can take the mantle when the rest don't necessarily perform.
And he's.
It did look like he was going to be surplus to requirements not too long ago, so he's proved most invaluable.
And he's one of those players who has that skill, the step over with the right foot, taking it onto his left foot, that everyone knows he's going to do it, but they still can't stop it. Sort of a bit like everyone knows Arjen Robben's going to cut in and bend one in the top corner.
He did on Saturday.
Yes, didn't he? Mr. Walker Porter says, can Spurs keep this up if Winks, Lloris and Dele injuries are more serious than first feared?
It'll be hard if they're more serious than first feared. But they have got a squad now. They're not, it's last year, I think they were, they struggled when they got injuries. This season, you've been playing without Wanyama for, well, pretty much the whole season, haven't they?
And he's probably underused Dembele a bit this season as well, so they do have options.
Well, he's had an injury as well, hasn't he? He's only just coming back. Alderweireld's not there and they're doing perfectly fine. So, I mean, obviously you have six or seven players out is a problem, but I mean, that's true of any club.
The thing about their squad as well is that an awful lot of their players can play in more than one position, so the versatility will help them.
Does anyone give Crystal Palace any hope? Because they did play well. They look like you've said before. You don't think they'll go down? Because you said it takes time to fully Hodgsonize a squad, which is a terrifying sounding prospect. But he seems to be Hodgsonizing them at the moment.
I don't think they'll go down.
Okay,
well, but they might go down. But they're definitely a lot better than they were, and so therefore there's hope.
Stoke 2, Leicester 2. This was a good game.
Yeah, it was a good game. Yeah.
Surprisingly good game. We all love Peter Crouch, I believe. You were saying yesterday, Barry, that he might want to leave Crouchy.
Well, I didn't say he might want to leave, but he does seem to be, constantly frustrated at his inability to nail down a first team place. But the difference between him and other players in the same position is that he doesn't strop about it. He jokes about it, but it's quite obvious he is frustrated and he would like to start more games. He said that after the game on Saturday. And in the past, someone showed on Twitter, someone put up their fantasy football team and he was in it, and Crouchy responded and went, oh, at least I'm getting a start somewhere. So he's just a nice guy, and he doesn't seem like the kind of fellow who throws his rattle out of the pram and sulks. And he has proved invaluable as a game changer coming off the bench for Stoke, but he's not getting any younger, and maybe if he thinks there'll be more opportunities for him elsewhere, he will try and take them.
I don't know, he's 36 and he clearly is in at a club where he can make a difference coming off the bench, so I'm not really sure how much better can get than that.
Well, Jose likes a big man,
and he likes an elderly big man, given Zlatan. But
so Crouch to United, it's almost too nice United, isn't he, Crouchy?
I was in 2008. I was in Cape Coast in Ghana, and as I'm sure you're aware, the big Cape Coast rivalry, their derby, is between venomous vipers and mysterious dwarves. And I was with Ian Hawkey. We went to the ground of mysterious dwarves, and the chairman was there. So we were chatting away to him. And we said, do you fancy signing Peter Crouch, do you? Just because we wanted to be able to write a story with a headline, Crouch to Join Dwarves.
Presumably you wrote a book about all of that, Jonathan?
I don't think I have.
Wow.
The story I got out of that I have written about is Bob Mensah, the great former goalkeeper of Mysterious Dwarves, who was killed in a bar fight in 1971. Mm. And he was, probably the greatest West African goalkeeper before Thomas Nkono and Jojo Bell came along.
Okay. Has anybody seen, it's early days for Claude Puel at Leicester, but signs that actually he's less boring than we thought he would be?
Well, yeah, and I think the Leicester squad does have potential, more so than a Southampton squad, to be a bit more exciting. Because, well, once Southampton kind of lost Sadio Mane, they never really replaced him with that kind of electrifying pace and ability to take on defences. And I think with Leicester, they do have a pretty decent squad. And I think we kind of will get to see more facets of what Claude Puel was about.
Well, maybe Southampton is boring. I mean, they've, what, 9 goals in 11 games this season?
Yeah, I agree.
They haven't got more exciting since Puel left.
Sad for Southampton, isn't it? And actually, sad for the Saturday fixtures. There were only 4 goals in the 3 p.m. Saturday fixtures. Before we move on to them, sad news, former Stoke defender Deonatan Texeira died aged 25 last night, a suspected heart attack in his back home in Brazil. He was 3 years at Stoke, played twice, played on loan at Fleetwood. A few Stoke players, Peter Crouch tweeting, horrible news, lovely guy. Jack Butland says, devastated, such a positive and happy man, sending all my loves. When Hugo Ehiog passed away, actually, and we were doing fantasy football, and Rachel Riley said, actually, there is a charity called Cry at c-r-y.org.uk where anybody can get a heart check, so it doesn't matter how old you are. If you think you're in the peak physical health, that is something you can do to see if you have the defect that people have that can cause these things, if that is what sadly took this guy's life. As I said, 4 goals in Saturday's 3 p.m. kickoffs. Southampton, as you mentioned there, Jonathan, lost to Burnley. They've scored 5 in their last 6, Southampton. It must be, at what point do you just think, why am I going every game to this?
I'm a Sunderland fan, don't ask me.
Well, I'm a Cambridge fan as well, but I'm just thinking for Southampton fans. I think they, do you think any of them think, they didn't seem disappointed to lose Puel, but actually, do you think any of them are thinking now, oh, maybe we shouldn't have?
Well, they're still mid-table, aren't they? Are they in, they're still, what, 13th?
I think their recruitment, well, Southampton obviously have their process with the black box and their recruitment, and I think they did pretty well with getting Lamina and Hoot for more defensive positions, obviously, but I think they never really looked at the attack and kind of filled the gaps of what they were missing, and I think that just means they're going to continue in the same vein as last season.
Huddersfield 1, West Brom 0. That was a lovely goal, wasn't it, from Van La Parra?
Yeah, fantastic finish.
Who is Jorginho Wijnaldum's half-brother.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh. And their cousin is Royston Drenthe.
Oh, this is a good family.
It's a good family. Five.
If there's a Boxing Day football match for that family, they'll do well. Aaron Moy has met the boy who sent him a fiver, Barry. You'll be pleased to know.
Oh, has he?
Yeah. But unlike you, I don't know if he forensically actually asked him to prove, you know, if he'd found the £5 or not.
Okay.
He said he's a credit to his family, is what Aaron said of the boy.
And did the boy say the same of Aaron?
We don't know yet.
See, Aaron actually is sort of caught up in that Fulham thing. He wasn't deemed good enough for Fulham by that analytics guy who's been weirdly sacked.
Oh, Daniel Taylor wrote a brilliant, that brilliant story. Did you see this?
Yeah, Klein, his name, isn't
Quick
it?
Yes,
yeah. And he was not getting on with Jukanovic, so he said the best way, it was in Daniel's piece yesterday in The Observer, the best way to prove that they were getting on is that in a press conference, Klein would run in a sumo outfit, and then Jukanovic would tear off his suit to reveal a sumo outfit, so presumably not one of those really big ones, because... Yeah. You'd have seen that at the start of the press conference. Then they'd have a sumo fight for 5 minutes. That clip would go viral, and that would prove that they were friends.
I am scarred.
Well, I think that's a great idea, I think. So surprising that he's lost.
You're going to do that with Jimbo at the FSF World Cup?
I have no axe to grind with Jimbo.
I was just doing one of those Louis Theroux silences to see if you'd fill it.
I know you were. But yeah, it was a good win for Huddersfield. West Brom, I think, it'd be interesting to see how long Tony Pulis lasts. Apparently, he's not under any pressure, but they've won 2 in 20. That's not good. And any other manager, I'd say, would have got his cards by now. But the way they are going, they will get relegated.
I thought he signed quite well as well. I mean, Hegazi and Krakowiak, I think, are both good players and sort of. the kind of players West Brom should be signing if they want to slightly move up to the next level.
Can we read into the fact that there were not very many goals in these games? Bournemouth 1-0 at Newcastle, Brighton 1-0 at Swansea? Or is it just that's just occasionally that happens? Or do you think that everyone's so scared of losing that everyone just defends the whole time?
I think it just happens occasionally. I think there's something else going on. There are a couple of people on TV have mentioned to me that the Premier's got a bit of a problem this year, that there's a load of big teams who are not in the Premier League. And the teams who would get a big audience, who sort of naturally have they become, whether they're doing well or badly, they're a story. So I hesitate to put Sunderland in there, but Villa, Leeds, even Forest, you know, teams with sort of a global recognition factor. And the fact they're not there, and you've got Huddersfield, Brighton, Burnley, Bournemouth, sides who are absolutely in the Premier League on merit and incredibly well to get there, but they sort of somehow lack the glamour of other sides, and that is sort of, I'm told, causing a problem with audiences.
Oh, really?
I actually think, if anything, that makes for a better story. I think I've been pretty impressed with both Brighton and Huddersfield, and just, you know, even if they lack the glamour, just that story, that trajectory of them reaching the Premier League and now sitting, all of them, I think, in the top half of the table is quite a story in itself.
It is a story in itself, but I guess the point is, if you're somebody who hasn't got a particular affinity to any of those clubs, and you're at home on a Saturday.
If Man United are playing Leeds, you go, oh, I might watch that. If Man United are playing Brighton, are you less likely to watch it?
I think, you know, going back to the days I used to watch Football Italia when Jimbo was hosting it, you know, you do all the teams, you know, the rivalries and all that. Now I don't watch so much Italian football, but keep an eye on it. But there are, you know, quite a few teams in Serie A that I know nothing about. Like, I've barely heard of half of them. Well, not half of them, but quite a few of them. I presume it's the same thing Jonathan's talking about.
I'm just looking forward to your Italian roundup in part three, Barry.
Oh, it'll be short. It's the same thing, I suppose.
The recognition factor.
The recognition factor.
But hang on, isn't it? It's just, and we've said this before, it's just we're not 10, and football's great when you're 10, so you know everything about it, and when you're 40, you know less. Well, Priya, you obviously don't count for that.
I'm not 10.
Leeds, Villa and Forest. Leeds, Villa and Forest have all won European Cups or been in European finals, so they have a recognition from that a Brighton just doesn't have.
That's a good, interesting point. And that's where we'll end part two. In part three, we will talk to Sid in Spain. We'll see what happened in Europe. We'll have feedback call on your questions back in a sec. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Spain. Sid Lowe's on the line. How are you, Sid?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, really good. We haven't spoken since Spurs beat Real Madrid. How did that go down?
Well, I think it went down, as you might expect, with a kind of a huge amount of kind of disappointment, a very deep analysis of what's gone wrong with Real Madrid. But actually, I think one of the more interesting elements to it is that it was kind of funneled into a much broader debate about I wouldn't so much say the state of Spanish clubs in Europe, because I don't think there's a sense that Spanish clubs are especially awful in Europe. But it was more channeled into a sense of, hang on, it's time to take the English club seriously, that this is starting to happen for England, that the resources that we knew they had, the quality of the players that they've got, and now perhaps, which maybe wasn't the case in the previous sort of decade or so, now perhaps the very best coaches as well. I mean, there's a very clear sense in Spain that maybe their time has come. Maybe it's England's turn.
And is there any stories saying that actually Real Madrid will just go and get Pochettino and Ali and Kane?
I mean, of course, implicitly, that's always there. I must admit, though, for what it's worth, that the immense majority of the kind of Spanish reaction, specifically in terms of Real Madrid doing what Real Madrid tend to do, which is you can't beat them, you go and buy them, has actually been pickups from the English media rather than the Spanish media driving that agenda themselves. I think there is obviously a clear awareness that, wow, these guys are really quite good. And I think with Harry Kane in particular in the second game, I think there was an appreciation of Kane as something more than just a striker, you know, more than just a goal scorer, more than just as someone who scores. And I think there was a kind of a quite deep appreciation of how he played and a sense that maybe actually, you know what, maybe this guy is at the kind of level that clubs like Real Madrid and Barcelona could look into. But I wouldn't take it very much further than that just yet. As I say, most of the stories that specifically looked at that were pickups from the British media. And as I say, the analysis was more focused on that sense that, oh, wow, this is something we should worry about.
Sid, Pochettino obviously is held in very high regard in the Spurs dressing room. Young, hungry players who haven't won much, most of them. How do you think he would get on in a dressing room full of big egos and players who are used to success and have won pretty much everything in the game?
Well, there's no doubt that Real Madrid's dressing room would be different. And what's happened at Spurs, I think, is consistent with the way that Pochettino was at Espanyol. I remember when Pochettino first came to England, and I wrote about him and I spoke to some of the players that who he'd worked with at Espanyol. And one of them was a guy called Moises Hurtado. Now, Moises Hurtado was one of the older players in the Espanyol dressing room. And he told me that he said, you know, this is a guy who I think is an absolutely brilliant manager. I think the tactical variety, the intelligence, the way that he wants you to play is you know, really among the very best I've seen. He said, but one thing I must say I didn't like was the way that he treated some of us older players. And he talked about Pochettino's desire to have younger players that he can mould, younger players that he feels that he can kind of condition into playing a particular way, that he likes very energetic players. So obviously, there's a physical component there, but I think there's a kind of a psychological or mental component as well, that these are players that you can sort of impose upon, players that you can convince and you can show them that they can be better, not players who already think they are the very best. And it was curious, really, because this, of course, was then picked up in Spain, this story about Hurtado has a go at Pochettino and says, I don't like the way that he behaved with the older players, and this was out of order and all the rest of it. So Hurtado went on the Spanish radio to say, well, it's been slightly misconstrued in England. And they said, well, what did you mean to say then? And then, of course, he proceeded to repeat exactly the same thing, which was that, you know, he wasn't great with some of the older players. And I think actually, you know what, I think Pochettino would probably recognise that, not necessarily recognise it in terms of saying, you know, he's right that I was perhaps didn't treat the older players as maybe I should. But I think he would recognise that he likes younger players that he can mould. And of course, you know, the success at Southampton, at Spurs with younger players and what that's done for the England national team, probably proving him right, isn't it?
On the pitch, top four all won. Asensio's goal is just glorious, isn't it?
There's a great photograph on the I think it's Mark. Hang on, I'll check for you. Yeah, it's on the front of Marca. There's a great photograph on the front of Marca, and it's the goalkeeper diving and a couple of players turning, and Asensio's on one side, and the ball is in the net, but it is just in the net directly behind where the post and the bar join. So they've done a yellow circle around the ball. Now, admittedly, that's something the Spanish media do quite a lot, is to circle things that you can see anyway. And you think, yeah, thanks a lot for that big circle. Otherwise, I wouldn't know that it was Cristiano Ronaldo. But on this occasion, it actually really kind of works, you know, because you've got this sort of very busy photo where there's a lot going on. It's like, spot the ball. Oh, there it is, right in the very, very, very top.
Ah, oh, lovely. Spot the ball with the ball is an easier competition, isn't it? So, yeah, so straightforward win for Real. Good win for Barcelona and Valencia as well. That's their seventh win in a row, is it, Valencia?
Yeah, and it's the first time they've done that, and they did actually play that brilliantly. They were made to suffer a little bit this weekend, but it worked out nicely for them. There's some nice footage as well. Simone Sasso was trying to become the first Valencia player to score in seven games in a row, and he was taken off, and he didn't look too happy about it. And then there was a moment where he leaves the bench and goes down to the dressing room, down the tunnel and into the dressing room, and you see Marcelino, the manager, say, stop, wait a minute. And he goes off. And of course, this causes a big stir until the footage comes out. I don't know if it was sort of 3 or 4 hours later. And said, well, here's what actually happens. And he goes past Marcelino. Marcelino says, well, wait. And he says, and he walks off, and they think he's in a huff. He comes back again 10 minutes later. Of course, he's been to the bog.
Huge win for Atletico as well at Deportivo, last-minute winner.
Massive. Yeah, I mean, it's curious, isn't it, Atletico Madrid? 11 games into the season, unbeaten. That should be a good thing. But it's kind of glass half full, glass half empty thing. Just too many draws. And of course, that's what's been really problematic for them in the Champions League, those two draws against Karabakh. And they basically know they're out. I quite liked what Gabby said, the Atletico Madrid captain. He was asked, you know, whether Atletico Madrid had to fight for the chance to play in the Europa League. This is obviously immediately after. It looks like their Champions League campaign may well be over. And he said, well, right now, I think the Europa League is shit.
He's probably right, isn't he? And just finally, Cedric Bakambu, is that how I pronounce it?
Bakambu.
A hat-trick of disallowed goals. That's very impressive.
Yeah, it's quite good, that, isn't it? He's also got this fantastic yellow stripe for his hair at the moment, Bakambu. A hat-trick of disallowed goals. They've got a great forward line. I guess a lot of our listeners will know this, but their forward line is Baka and Bakambu. Which is a brilliant forward line, although it was neither of them this weekend. It was Sansone who scored the goals.
Thanks, Sid. Cheers for your time, as always.
My pleasure.
And Sid may well be joining me, Barry, Jonathan and Barney at our live show. Is this your first live show, Wilson, for the Guardian Football Weekly?
It is.
What are you going to bring to the party?
What do I always bring to the party? Expensive wine.
Orthopaedic shoes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm excited to hear you're joining the orthopaedic club.
I saw a podiatrist on Friday, and I will update you as soon as the insoles come in. December the 14th at the Emmanuel Centre. Please come. So the audience is bigger than the panel. Priya, can we have a minute on France?
Yeah, there were 3-5-0 wins, 1-6-0 win, so lots of goals. We can start with the Rhône derby, which is probably the most eventful. Saint-Étienne got thrashed 5-0 by Olympique Lyonnais. Lyon took the lead through a certain Memphis Depay, who actually scored through a nutmeg. So the defender was in front of him, and he just took a shot through the defender's legs and scored. And he had a great game. Nabil Fekir had a great game. I said before the season that their front four of Mariano, who they signed from Real Madrid, Bertrand Traore, Memphis, and Nabil Fekir could be very fun to watch. And they all produced in the same game for probably the first time this season, I think. But the controversy was when Fekir scored the 5-0, took off his shirt, and kind of essentially provoked the home fans in a Messi-esque kind of gesture. So he held up his shirt to the fans. Pitch invasion, riots. Game was actually called off with minutes left to play, but then it was stopped for around 20 minutes. But then the players came back and finished the game to essentially an empty stadium. But yeah, Lyon are up to third in the league now and hitting some form. 6 wins in all competitions and 4 clean sheets in their last 4. Elsewhere, PSG won 5-0 without Neymar, actually, but his deputy, Julian Draxler, deputised very, very capably. That's a goal and assist for him. But Dani Alves was one of the stars of the show. He assisted the first 2 goals for Draxler and Mbappe in... both of them were really, really good balls. Mbappe was really good as well. Marseille also won 5-0, but it was a bit overshadowed by tifos from the Marseille fans, basically telling Patrice Evra that they don't want him at the club anymore after his kung fu kick incident during the club's warm up in the Europa
League. Do we know exactly what happened?
Well, basically, he was being abused because he hasn't been performing really well. He was being abused by his own fans. And I think it was during the warm-up of their Europa League game, and he just went into the crowd and kung fu kicked the supposed culprits. And Marseille released a statement saying they obviously, you know, don't
condone players kung
exactly
fu
yeah
their
they
own
don't
fans.
They don't condone the fans' behaviors, but also think that Evra, as you know, as a seasoned professional, should be a bit more in control of his behavior. Monaco won 6-0 as well. Keita Balde was on the score sheet again, and his partner up front, Guido Carrillo, got 2 as well. So they didn't really miss Radamel Falcao, who was also out as Neymar was for PSG. Lille won 3-0. Jonathan might be interested because apparently, I think L'Equipe said if Bielsa didn't win this game, he might be sacked because Lille are 19th and their opponents, FC Metz, were 20th. So, it doesn't probably mean that much that they beat literally the only team below them in the league, but it does keep Bielsa in his job for a bit longer.
Thank you, Priya. Barry, Italy.
Napoli held by Chievo, scoreless draw. Napoli's reserve keeper, Luigi Seppi, was almost beaten by a 50-yard shot taken by Ivan Radovanovic from inside his own half. Juventus avoided embarrassment after coming from a goal down against Benevento, the rock-bottom side, who've now lost 12. But they went a goal up against Juve in the first half. But Juve came back. Gonzalo Higuain and Juan Cuadrado scored in the second half, so they won that one. Lazio's home match against Udinese was postponed due to torrential rain, biblical scenes at the Stadio Olimpica. And they had the ref doing, you know, is it too wet to play?
Dropping the ball,
which just spludged and floated away. It was like unbelievable deluge. Roma moved above Samp into fifth with a 4-2 win over Fiorentina, and AC Milan beat Sassuolo. So top three, Napoli, Juve, Inter. Bottom three, Genoa, Verona, Benevento.
In Germany, the high point was the Mainz keeper. Have you all seen this? Robin Zentner, where he basically, the ball came to him and then he controlled it, but didn't get enough of a touch, so it rolled slightly behind him. But he looked down and thought the penalty spot was the ball. Well, this is the only thing we can possibly imagine. So then he tried to pass the penalty spot to one of his players. And then he realised that he'd missed the ball. Sadly, he managed to rescue the moment, so he didn't concede a goal. They were playing Mönchengladbach. Elsewhere in Der Klassiker, that ended up in a 3-1 win for Bayern over Dortmund. Robin Lewandowski and Alaba all scoring. Jadon Sancho came on for Dortmund, and they got a consolation elsewhere. RB Leipzig move into second with a 2-1 win over Hannover. Schalke are fourth after a 1-0 win over Lowly Freiburg. One of their players cleared out his own manager when he went for a sliding tackle, which is worth watching. And Köln lost 3-0 at home to Hoffenheim, their bottom without a win. Jonathan, Ryan Babel scored for Beşiktaş at the weekend. You interviewed him. Is he nice?
He's very nice, yeah.
Yeah, tell us all about him.
I was over in Turkey doing the Turkish launch of Pyramid. And I sort of said, any chance of getting a word with Ryan Babel? And it was set up immediately. And he's lovely. I kind of, he said, let's meet in a cafe in a hotel. I get there, how long have we got? I think he's going to say 15 minutes. He went, oh, I'm going to go to the gym in an hour and a half. I was like, can't talk to you for an hour and a half. I've got no material.
Did you immediately think, oh, that's going to be a hell of a transcription?
Yeah.
Just ask him about his rap career, and I'm pretty sure he'll give you lots to talk about.
But he was very good talking about Liverpool and what had gone wrong there. And he was sort of, he's obviously pretty intelligent, and he kind of quite reflective, which I think you often don't find with sportsmen. And so rather than just blaming Rafa Benitez, he did blame Rafa Benitez to an extent. He was also saying, yeah, I was very young and I did things wrong as well. But so he was sort of very balanced about what had gone wrong, very realistic. But he was very good talking generally about Dutch football and what's gone wrong with Dutch football. Because he came through under Koeman. Koeman gave him his debut when he was 17 at Ajax. And you know, talking about the differences growing up at Ajax to how he would have grown up had he grown up at Liverpool. Because when he moved to Liverpool, he was 20 and he'd always lived with his parents. So yeah, you quite often find this when you're talking to players, you sort of forget about the human element, that for any 20-year-old leaving their parents to go anywhere, it's not easy. And if you go into a new country, okay, he spoke the language, but going to a new country and having to learn a whole new way of football, it's sort of the difference between the 4-3-3 being used to and moving to Rafa's system where, I mean, he saw himself as a centre-forward, but occasionally was played on the left, which is where he's now quite happy playing on the left at Beşiktaş. But saying that doing that in a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3-1, he's used to when he played on the left, he had a left midfield and a left-back behind him. And suddenly he's only got one player behind him and he's got to learn how to do that defending. And it was assumed he knew how to do it. And he said, I'd never done it. How was I meant to know? So he talked, I mean, I guess a lot of Dutch players can do this, but he talked about the theory of a game and the philosophy of a game way more than a lot of people would. But claims he has no interest in going into management. But what he is really good at, if you follow him on Instagram, he shoots these videos of game days and edits them. Like, I assumed he got a professional editor in. Apparently he does it himself. They're really kind of slick and good.
And did the conversation last for 90 minutes? There was no, like, 70 minutes into the date and you were like, so do you have any pets? What's your favourite movie?
I had a dinner reservation, so I had to stop it after half an hour.
Really?
Well, I think I'd been talking all day as well, which I know I kind of am prone to do. But I had to give...
Was anybody listening or...?
Well, there was a simultaneous translation, so they all had headphones on. I could have been listening to anything. But yeah, I did like an hour's lecture. Then there was a Q&A, and I had to do three TV interviews as well. So it was my throat
good to be wanted.
All Theresa May.
So it's good to be wanted, Jonathan.
Yeah, it is good to be wanted, yeah.
I'm pleased about that. Priya, the Dutch headlines.
This honestly just seems like a pity section for having me on. But no, it was a pretty good weekend.
Say again?
Who told her?
I don't know who told her. But look, she can say it. We don't have to keep it in. It's fine.
So I recommend you watch this goal because it was a very kind of Arsenal versus Norwich-esque goal. I think I retweeted it as well. Ado Den Haag versus Feyenoord, their first, their equaliser through Aaron Meyers. Loads of space in the middle, but it's very kind of neat, slick, one-touch football, and then finished off with a great volley, which is, you know, not the kind of football you generally expect from a side like Ado Den Haag. And Feyenoord dropping points again. They're already 12 points behind PSV, the league leaders, and they're in sixth, which is not good. But yeah, talking of PSV, well, I mean, good summary of their game is 20 equalised three times, but PSV took the lead four times. And it's kind of a bit of a flashback to their 2014-15 season when they won the title. Koku's gone back to playing on the counter as opposed to kind of a possession game that he tried last season. And yeah, it's just they've just got insane talent in attack, and that will pretty much win them the title. If you know, nothing goes horrendously wrong. Ajax dropped points again, lost at home to Utrecht, very tactically exposed, especially in midfield. And yeah, Utrecht have been a bit of a bogey team but Ajax have now trailed for 100 plus minutes at home this in the league this season, which is more than all of the home games in all of the competitions last season put together.
Thank you very much. In the Championship, Wolves march on at the top. They beat Fulham 2-0. Second place, Sheffield United beat Hull 4-1. Leon Clark scored all four. Bristol City caught up some ground. They moved above Cardiff after beating them 2-1. Villa lost to Sheffield Wednesday. And John Terry broke his metatarsal. Jonathan, Sunderland. We've heard Barry go on about it. Do you have anything to add?
No.
In the FA Cup, Oxford City, Maidstone United, Boreham Woods caused the biggest upsets of the first round. Well done to them. Do you want to tell us about Farrell Williams' goal, Barry?
Oh, it was absolutely wonderful. And there's a video on the Guardian Football website, so make a point of seeking that out. Farrell plays for Reading, and they were taking on Arsenal in the Women's Super League Cup at Meadow Park. Arsenal had just scored to make it 1-1, and direct from the kickoff, Farrell Williams scored. And, like, I mean, you know the way it used to be, you need a two-man or two-woman kickoff, one tips the ball to the other, and, well, you don't have to do that anymore, obviously. So she was sort of standing there like Johnny Wilkinson. It was quite obvious what her plan was. The ref blew the whistle. She ran up and just punted the ball over the goalkeeper's head and into the back of the net. And why the goalkeeper was so far off her line when it was quite clear what was about to happen, I don't know. But it was a remarkable bit of improvisation.
Also interesting that actually Farrell Williams only moved to Reading from Arsenal this summer. So
maybe she had inside information that the keeper just...
Possibly, sort of... yeah. But also just Arsenal ladies, perhaps a bit like the men's side, lacked like any sort of tactical coherence in what they were doing, because they played... Vivianne Medema, who's the Dutch national striker, and they played her in an attacking midfield role, and it was just kind of all over the place. Danielle van der Donk, who plays attacking midfield for the Dutch national team, was playing a holding role, and it was just very odd. And it's apparently a bit of a legacy left by Pedro Losa, who left the club recently, the last few weeks. But yeah, it's just odd, because Arsenal have always been a real force in women's football, but have been surpassed a bit by Chelsea and Manchester City in recent times.
You wanted to mention Girls Football Week, Priya.
Yeah,
what is this?
This is apparently this week is Girls Football Week. So I just encourage, if you're a mother, father, brother, sister, whatever, if you know a young girl, give her a ball, encourage her to at least try football, and maybe she'll come to like it.
Okay, yeah, do that. Feedback corner, huge John Ashdown controversy.
Oh.
Last week we were talking about greatest sporting achievements, and his greatest sporting achievement was winning the Aston-on-Trent Under-11 Club Man of the Year award, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Simon Hudson sent a tweet of said trophy, because he also won it once, and he said to John, "Wasn't your dad one of the coaches?"
Ooh.
And John Ashdown said, "Yes, my dad was one of the coaches." So it's just a wife calling. Hang on. I could get her views on Slaven Bilic, actually. I'm going to do that. Jay, we're just doing the pod. What Slaven Bilic has been sacked. What are your thoughts?
Where's he been sacked from?
West Ham.
Sad.
Thanks for your time, Jay. I'll call you later. So, yeah, so basically John Ashdown's dad gave his son the Club Man of the Year award. So
we'd already established it was just like a special award for... you know, yeah. turning up for training and not complaining too much when you never get picked. And now it was nepotism.
Absolutely right. Christian FM says, I've got a question for the pod. Since George Weah, despite a few legal hiccups, is still favourite to become the next president of Liberia, I wondered which ex-footballer you'd like to lead your respective countries. Barry.
Niall Quinn would probably make a good Irish
Shay Given
Taoiseach or president. No.
Okay.
Niall Quinn didn't make a great chairman of Sunderland, did he?
Yes. So more to worry about in Sunderland than the whole of Ireland. Jonathan.
I'd actually probably take Niall Quinn as well. He's just such a nice man.
He is a nice man.
I don't know. Is Gary Lineker an obvious thing to say? Probably is. What, Bielsa? I want Bielsa to do it. His brother was governor of Santa Fe province. Was it his brother or was it his sister? A sibling of Bielsa's was governor of Santa Fe province. Bielsa, because his press conference would be fantastic as well, kind of staring at his feet, mumbling and saying quite intelligent things in a way that nobody understands. That's leadership.
Ben says, if you were stuck on a desert island with all the Premier League managers, who would you entrust with building the escape raft? Pulis would, come on.
Yeah, Pulis. Yeah, yeah. He might be able to keep
two banks of four.
Well, Pulis did actually, I think, row the channel or something.
He did. He rowed from the Thames to the Seine. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's what he did last summer or the summer
so
before.
So he might not build the escape row, but he certainly
he understands understands the equipment as well.
I wouldn't care who built it. I would just assign 18 of the other 19 managers to keep an eye on Jose Mourinho, who would try and steal it while everyone's asleep.
But Pep would be there kind of saying, well, yeah, I can build it, but I just need the best plank in the world in every position. I need the best rope in the world, the best drums up underneath to give it buoyancy in the world. I don't know what else you need to build a raft, but he would need to have two of the best in the world to have a chance. But when he did it, could it be a brilliant raft.
No, it would be. It would be a joy to watch.
I think Mourinho would just use the wood to like make a fire instead.
Arsene would have said, I almost got that plank.
He'd have built a great raft 20 years ago. Tell you all about that. But
On the subject of fullback scoring hat-tricks,
Sneisha Mihailovic, he must have done, didn't he?
Yes, he's won. Andy Considine has won last season against Dundee. Ian Hart scored a hat-trick of free kicks for Leeds against Blackburn. And Steve Watson scored a hat-trick for Everton from fullback against Leeds.
Staunton, someone tweeted me. I think Steve Staunton scored a hat-trick, possibly of free kicks as well.
Oh, good. And Random Bloke says, I haven't even checked the length of the podcast yet, but I wish to complain it's wrong, as I'm sure this one will be too. Barry, thanks for your time.
Cheers.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Cheers.
Thank you, Priya.
Thank you.
We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.